Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email onair at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday, the 18th of November. I'm Daniel Roberts, your host on tonight's Informer.
And I'm Kate Kelly. On tonight's show, we're going to be looking at the decision made by the AFL yesterday to rule trans athlete Hannah Munsey ineligible for the 2018 AWFL draft, which was held this afternoon. We'll be talking to Guardian Sport editor Kate O'Halloran about why the AFL made this decision and CEO of Proud to Play, James Lolicato, about what it means for the trans sporting community.
We will be discussing the impact of this decision on the trans community with Joy's very own Michelle Shepherd. She'll be joining us later. Yesterday, news came as a shock for many within the trans community and has re-sparked that debate over female trans athletes and their right to play within women's leagues. In yesterday's statement, the AFL said their decision was based on available data on transgender physique, the maturity of the AFLW draft, and Munsey's individual circumstances. Kate spoke to Guardian sports editor Kate O'Halloran, and we got her viewpoints on yesterday's decision.
Yeah, look, it's a difficult one to understand. I mean, I got the press release statement yesterday afternoon, which was, as I understand, only about 15 minutes after Hannah herself found out. And the actual statement says that the AFL has taken into account, and this is a quote, the stage of maturity of the AFLW competition, its current player cohort, and Munsey's individual circumstances. So when I read that, I couldn't understand exactly what their reasoning was. It seemed to me like they were implying that there was something about Munsey's build that, you know, was an unfair distinction or advantage from the other women in the competition. So I gave them a ring and, yeah, they clarified that they were worried about this disparity in body size and bulk, apparently. And their line is that, well, the AFL women's competition's only had a year of semi-professional training and therefore, you know, their bodies or the stage of the competition is not at a level where they should be able to compete with Munsey. Mm. So that's the official line. I can comment on what I think about that, but that's as far as I got to clarifying what exactly they meant.
Yeah, because it seems in making this call the AFL have ignored kind of international best practice, including Olympic rules for trans athletes, which by what I've read, Hannah would have passed. How much of this decision do you think is just about the AFL not being ready?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's what I've argued anyway. I mean, if you look at AFL's own policy in AFL Victoria guidelines, it states that they respect gender reassignment in terms of, you know, a chosen gender identity. There's no requirement for anything like sex reassignment surgery. They follow International Olympic Committee guidelines in that regard, which were changed in 2016. And the only requirement that is stated in those guidelines is that a trans woman should demonstrate that her total testosterone level is below 10, a reading of 10, and Munsey's reading, according to reports, is only 0.5. So, you know, she's at least 20 times below their own recommended limit. And even so, those guidelines, not even rules or regulations. So, you know, by their own guidelines, she is well within her rights to play in this competition. And, you know, I've said that even this idea that her build doesn't match that of the players is not actually backed up by a fact. You know, there's players who are just as tall as her. I think she's 1 centimetre taller than the existing cohort's tallest player. and her weight is comparable to certain players in the league as well. So, you know, in my mind, it's absolutely a call about them not ready, being ready to have a trans footballer amongst the cohort.
Yeah. Do you think on a broader level it shows a culture, this decision shows a culture of bigotry towards women within the AFL?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think that what the AFL, you know, are purportedly doing is looking after cis women, and, you know, they might see that as inclusiveness, they might see that as equality, but, you know, women includes trans women, and in making this call, they've had absolutely no respect for a trans woman who has every right to nominate for the draft. And I think, you know, it was even more insulting that they've waited to make this call until the absolute last minute, and they've said that the decision's final, so she has no opportunity to actually appeal. So, you know, this statement that they've made, which I quoted in my article, that, you know, they're making very strong commitments to equality and inclusion at all levels of the game. Well, clearly they're not, because this is a clear statement about trans women not being part of what they say are the physical, psychological and social benefits of playing AFL.
Kate, what do you think this decision means for female trans players in the future?
Well, that's what I'm worried about, because, you know, they've said, oh, well, this is a decision that's limited to the 2018 season. But if they're going off this call that, you know, trans women somehow inherently have bodies that are, you know, unfit for participation in women's sport, then how is that ever going to change? You know, I mean, I said on the phone, well, you know, once his body is not going to change necessarily between now and next year, and neither is the existing cohort, so why, I can't foreseeably see how this changes. I mean, the weird thing as well is that they've said that she's eligible for domestic competition. So if she's able to play in Canberra competition, then why is it deemed safe for her to play, you know, against purportedly semi-amateur footballers rather than professional footballers? I mean, that seems to contradict their own logic.
Yeah, I was actually about to ask you that exact question.
Yeah. I mean, like, that, you know, if and I, you know, feel silly sort of reiterating their own logic because it's so illogical, but you know, if they're worried about the safety of these women, then what? It's okay for an amateur league, but not for the professional league? I don't understand how that makes sense. Surely that's, by their own logic, even more dangerous.
Kate, is there anything that you want to add about this?
Oh, look, I'm just really disappointed. I'm just really, you know, upset, you know, for all the... I know that there are other trans women who play in leagues at a domestic and local level, and I know that they've been really personally affected by this, and, you know, they're some of the greatest advocates for our game and so passionately involved in playing this sport, and I don't want to see a decision like this filter down to lower levels. I just think that the AFL simply has to take a stand. Otherwise, you know, the AFL will just be remembered as a sport that is an exclusive sport. And as someone who's very passionate about the game and LGBTI inclusion, you know, what they've done with their stance on marriage equality was, you know, seemingly a good start, but this just flies in the face of that. It really eradicates any goodwill that they've built with the LGBTI community. So for me, something drastic has to change now to fix that.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
That was Kate Kelly talking to sports editor from The Guardian, Kate O'Halloran.
Perhaps the key reason that this has been such a big news story is because it's the first time a ruling in regards to trans athletes has been made by the AFL. Whilst they've stated that in the future, trans athletes' ability to play will be treated on a case-by-case basis, there is, of course, concern from within that community about what precedents this sets. Earlier, Dan spoke to James Lolicato, CEO of Proud to Play, which provides safe spaces for same-sex attracted and gender-diverse young people to play sport. Dan started off by asking him, is this decision a setback for trans female athletes?
Yeah, I definitely am. I think as Proud to Play, we try to get as many young trans people into sport and community exercise as possible. And this decision with Hannah doesn't give them that visibility in high-ranking sports that they really need to say that they can be that too one day.
Are there any positivities that have come out of this discussion?
I think one of the positivities is that it's now a discourse. So we're now talking about it. Trans participation in sport hasn't really been talked about. And people really don't see it as a problem or see it as a needed fix. But now that this has come out, now that Hannah's braved this, it really shows that it is a problem and we need to tackle it.
Do you think this has been handled well? What improvements could be made in the future by any kind of, you know, deciding body or sporting corporation?
I think it was made too public from the get-go. It really needs, this is something that's very sensitive. Hannah has now been opened up to a lot of transphobia, a lot of queerphobia as well, and a lot of negative rhetoric about just her living. It really needs to be kept on a private matter, and the AFL needs to consult with those trans bodies to speak to them about what they would do in this situation, not just consult with themselves.
How did it become so public?
I don't know. I think the AFL didn't know the answers to a lot of the questions, and they made that known to everybody.
What example has been set for other sporting codes that may be going through this action in the future?
Well, I think other sporting codes now won't be so reactive and will be proactive in their response. So it's really time that sporting codes write policies, follow the Victorian Equal Opportunities and Human Rights guidelines, and start doing the best world practices that we see the International Olympic Committee doing. So it's no longer time to be reactive and wait until something goes wrong before you fix it. It's time to get these in place now. So when it does happen, it's ready.
So what is the state of trans inclusion in other sports in Australia? I know that this is the first major sport. I don't know that. Is this the first sporting major code that's had to make this kind of decision in Australia?
No, it's not. Rugby has made this decision with a trans female athlete in the past before, as well as volleyball has had state players who identify as trans too. So it's not the first time this decision has been made. It's the first time it's been made in such a public scene. And it's the first time they've really gone against what the IOC guidelines are, which are world best practice, and really put in their own guidelines.
So through your work, I'm sure that you hear from a lot of trans athletes. What do you think their major concern would be from this outcome?
I think it's more the fact that they might be outed. A lot of them aren't out. They've spoken to their state bodies and their national sporting bodies about keeping their identity private. So nobody knows. So I think that maybe they might be scared that they might be outed in some way on the field. And they also might be scared that this rhetoric might cause the state sporting organisation to take back their policy guidelines and to pull them out of the sport too.
Is there anything you want to add, James, to this discussion at the moment?
I just think that the AFL handled it very negatively and that if for us to increase inclusion and diversity, especially of young trans people, we need to be seeing those mentors on state and national sporting levels so they have the opportunity to grow up with influencers.
James, thanks for joining us on The Informer.
Thank you so much.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427JOY949, email onair@joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Dan, I think I just want to come back to one of the interesting points this has brought up about how this won't be the first and it certainly won't be the last time that sporting codes all over Australia and internationally have to deal with a transgendered athlete. And obviously there is a international precedent that's already been set. The Olympics has its own rules and guidelines about transgendered individuals, but Australia is lacking behind. Obviously, and cases like these will...
Well, they're going to keep happening. And we just heard from James then. He mentioned that this isn't the first time it's actually happened in Australia. It's definitely the first time that, from what I'm aware, I could be wrong, but from what I'm aware that's had this kind of coverage. For one thing, that he said that the AFL have got it wrong in that the fact they've made it so public. Mm. So therefore it's become... it's become, I guess, hurtful. Not that you or I want to speak for anyone in particular. Mm. That's not the point of this discussion. We just want to, I guess, highlight the fact that maybe this could have been handled better.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, the effects of this situation on the trans community, I definitely can't speak about. But, you know, they'll be hurtful and people are obviously angry. But a couple of years ago, this, you know, I want to highlight the fact that a couple of years ago, this wouldn't have even been on the radar, you know? Like, trans rights and queer rights in general within Australia are being talked a lot more about now than they were in the 90s.
I guess it's also highlighted as well the fact that the AFL Women's League has just been brought in a year before. So this is something that the draft especially is something that's being watched. And I think, like Kate said from The Guardian earlier, the AFL did hold off from making this decision till right before, which again seems like the wrong thing. But at the same time, we aren't aware of what kind of policy they seem to have no policy in place.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Mm. Yeah, because it sort of seems like entrapment for Hannah in the sense that she can't, you know, she can't fight back or she can't say, you know, relaunch an argument against the decision, which seems a bit brutal. But I think, yeah, what that kind of indicates from an outsider's perspective is a complete inability or just an unawareness to have any actual policy in place to deal with these issues.
Well, look, the conversation over social media following the ruling was unsurprisingly highly divisive. We saw on Facebook and Twitter people, I guess, coming for Hannah, but also what we've seen today is a lot of love and support for Hannah. Hannah said herself, and I guess her tweet was the classiest of all, really. She's said, "Good luck to all the girls who nominated for the AFLW draft tomorrow, especially my mates from Canberra. I can't wait to see you all at the highest level and to play with and against you back in Canberra next year." Now, we haven't heard anything from Hannah today as far as we're aware, it's a pleasure to read those words from her. And, you know, she's, I guess she didn't ask to be put in this position, so publicly. We can't speak for her, but we do wish her, you know, all the best with whatever she's going through right now is pretty hard.
Yeah. And it was a very graceful and a very classy response. You're quite right in that. I also want to bring, a point to your attention that, a point that I think is worth discussing. Every major media outlet in the country that I read today, I didn't read The Australians, but I read today, that discussed this came out pretty much in support of her. You know, you had support from media institutions that you expect, like Junkie, through to The Guardian, obviously, because we've spoken to Kate, through to The Herald Sun. And Mark Robinson in The Herald Sun, writing an op-ed, made an exceptionally good point because, you know, a lot of what the AFL has tried to say as justification for why Hannah can't play is that she will, you know, that she's a danger to the other girls because of her physicality or that it's unfair. And Mark Robinson made this interesting, I thought, quite valid point that, you know, not only does that offend and is inaccurate about Hannah's capability as a player on the field, but it also is kind of offensive to the women who did get the AFL draft today, because if you've ever gone to see a women's AFL match, you will know that those girls, they're not scared of anything. Like, you know, there could be a bull in that field and they would still plow on for that ball. Like, it's...
Absolutely. They are impressive there's no doubt who knows how this has happened? It's such a disappointment. Look, you're on The Informer on Joy 94.9. We're going to do something. We were waiting for Michelle from Trans POV to come in, but unfortunately that hasn't happened. So we're going to go to something we don't usually do on The Informer and give you some Kylie Minogue. You're on Joy 94.9. This is The Informer, and that's it for another episode of The Informer. We'll be back tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. to bring you the day's big news from an LGBTIQ perspective. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or wherever you get your preferred podcast from.
We'd like to thank tonight's guests, Kate O'Halloran and James Lilicato. My name is Kate Kelly.
And I'm Daniel Roberts.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427JOY949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.